my story of 2009, when I lost my 714 votes out of 82,000.
Yeah.
And I went to Karen Handel, and then the election stood, and then I went to Brian Kemp in 2010. And Brian had his best investigator, Chris Harden, was now head of elections. Chris Lee and I communicated about every quarter for the next 3 years. Nobody knew that. So whatever information I was uncovering about what happened in 09, I was giving to Chris so he could get it in the Secretary of State's office. So in 2012, in December, after Fulton County had screwed up the presidential so bad, and a guy came in as an observer, which is a really long story, he's a Republican guy from Forsyth County, and he came in and oversaw the general election of 12, the presidential. And we had a 39-page report of all the things that were wrong and what needed to be done. And which never saw the light of day.
That's of course not.
Yeah. And so when I came in,
hey guys.
When all of that happened in 2012, and all that happened in 2012, there were two members of the Board of Elections resigned. The chair of the board and one of the Republican members of the board, one of the Republican appointees. So I called up the Republican Party in Fulton County and asked if they would appoint me as an independent. Because the rules are that the party appoints, but the person doesn't have to be a member of the party. Now, I had just won an independent race in Atlanta with votes on both sides, so I just wanted to keep that independence, label, that independent label. And so I asked if I could do that. Well, the Republican Party ran all the way to the flagpole to Brian Kemp and Nathan Hill, and they said, yeah, this chick knows what the heck's going on down there. She'll really clean it up. Let her go in as an independent. So it was the first time ever. But, they knew that I was about good elections. And so so that was in December of 12. So I got appointed in January of 13. And in July of 13, we brought in a new elections director. And so we got a new guy running the elections division. And he is a consummate professional. I mean, this guy is really good. And he's so good that some people at City Hall tried to get him fired about a year ago on some pretty outrageous stuff. But what they had said was, that there were some voting inaccuracies and discrepancies in two or three precincts in Southwest, and that it was deliberate. Well, there was some stuff going on in Alpharetta and some other places, but it was 1%. The whole thing amounted to less than 1%. So Fulton County said, we're not firing. We're not doing it in Atlanta. Because, he's their guy. So so he was still there. And so I ran for a seat in 13 because I knew what had happened to me in 09. And there were four things that had happened. And if y'all are interested in hearing those, I'll give you the story of what they did. So I knew I would be deep enough in the streets to clean up the elections process. And so there were the four things that happened. The first one I didn't know about until 13. I didn't figure this out. But the guy that I told you that was a guru from Forsyth County who came in and oversaw the elections, he called me up in July and he said, Mary, all of us elections professionals never believe elections are stolen. We believe they're messy, we believe they're problematic, but we never believe they're stolen. He said, but I've now known you for 6 months. I decided to go back and look at your returns. He said, you didn't lose your election night. You lost your election the first week of early voting. There were too many votes for the other guy the first week that didn't translate into weeks 2 and 3 and the day of the election. He says, statistically, it doesn't happen that way. so I went, that's really good information. Because we had known that people were busing people in, but I had always assumed they were legitimate voters. You know, I had no idea that they were busing people in that weren't legitimate voters. But armed with that information, that was really important. So four things had happened. One is they bused people in. So in 13, we had early voting poll watchers. And, you know, everybody does poll watching the day of the election. But we started day one, every single polling place, early voting polling place, I had two guys at each place, girls and guys, at each place in Mary Norwood t-shirts, 150 feet from the building, which is the law, and they were in t-shirts with cameras. So they had their cell phones with cameras. And I would go out and do selfies with them. And so not only were my people out there, but I was showing up. Now it is a lot harder to drive a van with six felons, you know, guys that are going to commit felonies by voting illegally if somebody's watching. So what we heard was that the political machine here wanted 15,000 early voters. They only got 5,000.
Wow.
I won by 2,500 votes. Then two other things happened, which were really important. And in both of these, the new guy fixed, and I had no idea. So, I mean, I knew he was great after I saw this. What we had heard happened in 09, and we could not prove, don't record this guy. This is my secret weapon, because I know this stuff, and people don't know that I know this stuff, so it's never gone public. So in 09, what we heard happened was at 7:30 at night, because the poll workers, until Rick came in, would go to the same precincts for year after year after year after year, so you had everybody kind of, you know, with their candidate and their preference and whatever. So when you've got your voter list sitting there, you know everybody on your list who's supposed to come through and vote that day. You know how old they are, you know what race they are, you know what sex they are. So if you know that your little ladies who are over 80 years old don't drive after dark, and it's now 7:30 on December 1st, you can just write out voter certificates for them, because those voter certificates don't have a signature match, and they don't have any embossing or anything to say that that certificate is what actually was there that night. There's nothing to say that that's the same white piece of paper. Now, what the poll workers are supposed to do is to check a little box and say they saw a photo ID. But what if they didn't check? Well, they hadn't committed fraud. They just forgot to check. So we went into the voting data center the day after the 2009 election, and the law partner of the current mayor got us thrown out on a bogus ethics charge that he filed with the state ethics commission. And they closed us down, which was stupid. They said we were a pack. We couldn't be a pack because the voting was already over. I mean, you know, it was just crazy. It was crazy, crazy stuff. So anyway, what happened with the new guy coming into Fulton County is he put scanners in the precincts. So now when you give your photo ID, they scan it. So you couldn't have 50 that showed up that just no people forgot to check. Then the other piece that Rick saw was they withheld precincts until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, because then they would know the number to beat. They would know how many, you know, come in from other parts of the city. So when Rick reported out the numbers in 13, again when I ran, you looked at the screen and you didn't just have the numbers, you had the percentage of turnout. So how could you have 7A and 7B and 7D with 15% to 18% turnout, but 7C at 11 o'clock at night reports 35% turnout? People would be looking for it all day long. So they couldn't fluff up. But if you didn't know that 213 voters for this person to 98 for that person was 35%, you would never know. So the percentage of turnout meant they couldn't do the late night fluffing. And then the last thing they did was they got the housing authorities list, the confidential list, that when people left the housing projects, they went out and got an apartment and a voucher traveled with them. So the housing authority needs to know that you live in Spring Valley Apartments, Unit B2, because they need to send the money for your voucher to you in that apartment unit. So they have exactly where you live so that you can get that money and not still be in the projects. So the loyal opposition got that list, which is proprietary, you're not supposed to get it. Now, so what they did is they went out to those apartments and to these people that were still registered at the old housing projects, even though they'd been leveled, even though there was nobody there. There were voters that were still on the rolls from these various streets. And so the morning, so what happened was they knocked on the door Saturday night and said, Jimmy Johnson, you're out here in Mapleton and we are glad for you and you're getting money from the government. But you're still registered on Henry Thomas Drive and we just need you to come back in on Tuesday and vote for Henry Thomas Drive. Now, so we knew that that had happened and there were not enough from the projects to have turned the election. There were only about 115 that we could locate. But there were other people who had left houses that were abandoned, but they were still on the voter rolls. They just weren't in the projects. Because you had so much mortgage fraud that went through the city in 07 and 08, that there were lots of abandoned places where people were still on the rolls. So because Fulton County has a tax digest and they know which houses are having taxes paid, and they have the voter rolls, they have the ability to do a match and figure out where they could put fraudulent voters in. So what happened in 13 when I was on the board of elections is a great African American preacher was on the board with me, and I explained to him what had happened in 09, and I said the thugs didn't commit the felony. The person who committed the felony was the nice person sitting there in his apartment who was threatened and coerced to go back in and vote across county lines. So that Dr. Durley and the new executive director of the elections director got on radio and in print in 13 and said to members of the African American community, don't let anybody do this to you because you will be committing a felony and you will lose your right to vote. So that was a take it to the streets that helped slow that down. So those were the four things that happened. And that's my prelude. That is me.
Prelude, guys. And this is why we're so glad to have Mary Norwood here tonight. She's been involved in Atlanta for, decades?
Decades is good.
Decades. She knows what's going on.
And before you were born.
We're very glad to have her here to speak on her mayoral run for the mayor of Atlanta. I'm Weston Kirk. I'm a new face, I guess. I'm the treasurer for the Buckhead Young Republicans. Steve Hurlick is on his way back from Boston right now, so he'll be landing and coming here shortly. Very happy to have many new faces here tonight. We look forward to talking with you afterwards. We hope you enjoy your time, and nice to have my MAGA boys back there. Thank you very much for showing. So we're very, down-to-earth, communicative club. We hope that we have these nice kind of roundtable discussions, a lot of back and forth between our speakers and ourselves. You know, feel free to ask questions. If you have any questions for me, please see me after the meeting. But we'll do an introduction, and then we'll have Mrs. Norwood speak, and then we'll have a question and answer at the end. Thank you all very much for being here tonight.
I'm Harrison. I'm the executive director, whatever else I've added to my title. Just wanted to do a brief introduction. I know she's done a prelude, but she's very modest and very humble when it comes to her record as a civil servant. She actually began in business. She won't talk about that because she has everything else to talk about in her political career. She actually started a company that did robocalls before every other company did robocalls, so you can thank her for that.
It's never a good subject. But it was 1992. It was a long, long time.
Very innovative, very entrepreneurial, and she got it up and running all by herself. What really brought her into politics was multiple factors. My favorite one is her founding of Riot, which was way back when Fulton, I believe it was Fulton, tried to do another tax increase just like they're trying to do now. And she led a citizens group against it. She said, this is too much, this is too high, and she fought against it, fought against the taxation on the citizens, on the residents. That, in addition to standing up for neighborhoods and making sure that, you know, the culture and the what makes Atlanta Atlanta survives throughout multiple different generations. So Mary is a dedicated civil servant. She, as she said, she ran for mayor in 2009. She's been on council since 2001. And then was appointed to the Board of Elections and ran for her seat back and won it, due to facing considerable obstacles and support from the administration on the opposing side. So it's going to be a pleasure to listen to her, and I encourage you to all listen well, because she very well might be the next mayor of Atlanta. So,
thank you. Are y'all introducing now? I mean, but I thought, is everybody introducing themselves?
No. Just you.
Okay, so three things, and one is I will talk a little bit about my business background, because that has been an issue. If you're going to run the city, do you have the background to actually, beyond just being down at City Hall and being married to a doctor who was a pediatrician of a lot of people, and so it's how we had a wide swath across the city of Atlanta. He saw hundreds and hundreds of kids, and then thousands and thousands of kids out here. But I went to school, graduated from Emory, eldest of six kids, needed to get a job because there was no money for law school. So I went out and got in the radio business of all the crazy things as a receptionist secretary, and within five years, I was running the company as the chief operating officer. We had seven radio stations located across the southeast. We, at the point that I came in and the president was fired and the owner stepped back in, we had seven stations, five were losing money, two were making money. In the next half a dozen years, we turned them around, marketed them well, and sold them for the highest prices south of Washington, D.C. This is pre-internet, this is pre-cable, this is pre-anything. So radio and television was the only way people could do it in those days. So it was a big deal and really fun. Then we did media brokerage. Media brokerage is actually the buying and selling of properties, not airtime. And I was the first woman in the country doing that. I was the first woman in the National Association of Media Brokers, and in the mid-1980s, I ran as president of the National Association of Media Brokers. Then from there, I came to City Hall, got defeated after a whole year of work, and got annoyed, and said there's got to be a better way that we can communicate to citizens. And that's when I started what in those days was called broadcast voice. It was not called robocalls. And computer telephony, because it was a combination of computers and telephones. And I was one of the first companies on the internet with a working product. But we were never one of these dialer things. We were messages that were sent to affinity groups. So it'd be like having a Facebook account. It would go to your friends. And so it was a very different system than what it evolved into. But I had it back in the day and merged with the company in Boston, and almost was an international company in March of 2000, when we had angel funding committed, we had an LOI, too long a story, but that's when the internet bubble burst and everything crashed. And so I came back to Atlanta. There was one more major issue, which was with our sewers.
Hey, do you guys need anything, or do you want me to tell Amber to come in like 30 minutes? Does anybody want anything? 30 minutes?
30 is great, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
And so I had one more major issue, and that's when I said to my husband, the phone calls are never stopping, maybe I need to see if I can get a vote. So I ran for city council citywide. Nobody saw me coming. So I got elected citywide in 2001, and then re-elected in 2005, and then, of course, ran for mayor in 2009 and lost by that narrow margin. Of course, I had to give up my seat because all the elections are confirmed. So in 2013, I ran to reclaim my seat for the reasons I explained.